This evening I should like to read with you a fascinating psalm, found of course in the book of Psalms. It's the 46th, Psalm 46. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore we will not fear, even though the earth be removed, and though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea, though its waters roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake with its swelling. There is a river whose stream shall make glad the city of God, the holy place of the tabernacle of the Most High. God is in the midst of her, she shall not be moved. God shall help her just as the break of dawn. The nations raged, the kingdoms removed. He uttered his voice, the earth melted. The Lord of hosts is with us, the God of Jacob is our refuge. Come before the works of the Lord, who has made desolations in the earth. He makes wars cease to the end of the earth. He breaks the bow and cuts the spear in two. He burns the chariot in the fire. Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. This is one psalm which we're left in doubt as to exactly when it was written and the circumstances behind its writing. It would seem there was some adversity or affliction or enemy working against the people of God, and especially Jerusalem, and this was the inspired language that is used here to buoy the faith of the people and bring to their remembrance the fact that they have in God something far more powerful than their armies might be, far more powerful than their weapons might produce. They've got in God everything they need to have everything they need. And thus it begins by describing God as both refuge and strength, and as the text says, a very present help in trouble. The nations round about do their very best to make things difficult, and yet God is the one who by his mere voice can shake the earth. He can change things in a moment, in an instant. And the Bible is full of stories like that, not the least of which is found in the book of Daniel. When Daniel's there at the request of the king. He's been a helper to the king to this point, and so he's reached an elevated place in the kingdom. But what the king doesn't realize is this is his last night to be king. And there's that handwriting on the wall. The handwriting which interpreted says, you've been weighed in the balance and found wanting. And that very night, his kingdom was taken from him. Well, God can turn things around in an instant, in a moment, when he chooses to do so. You might remember the words of the Apostle Paul in Acts 17 when he talks about God, who is the only true and living God, who's made everything. He's not worshipped as though he needs anything from us. And in that context, Paul goes on to say to the Athenians there that he's made of one blood all nations of men for to dwell upon the face of the earth. He has determined the times before appointed in the bounds of their habitation, or the boundaries of their habitation. Well, that's the story throughout the Bible and throughout history to this very present moment. The one in charge of the world is not us, it is God. The one truly in charge of everything is not you and not me, it is God. We have choices to make, and those choices affect a great deal with respect to things that happen to and around us. But in a larger sense, the larger matters of life and living in the world itself are outside of our control. God is in ultimate control of his world, his universe, the times and season he has appointed, the boundaries he decides, as Daniel also say in the book bearing his name, he sets up and he destroys kingdoms. He brings kings to power and he dethrones kings from their place. This is the God we serve. And all of that is the backdrop of this psalm we've just read. That though the earth itself seems to make no sense in terms of it being removed, the mountains being carried into the sea, the waters roaring, and even though the people of the earth will have their wars and they'll use their bow and their spears and their chariots, when all is said and done and the dust of what's happened will have happened, what will turn out is what God decides to allow to happen, what God's in fact decreeing in this matter. But I bring your special attention to verse number 10. Because it seems to be the key to understanding not just the language of the psalm, but to understand the real import of power the psalm has for us. And what's true of just this psalm is true of every promise God has made in Scripture. Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. And underscore in your mind that first part of the verse. Be still and know that I am God. This is one of the, in my opinion, more unfortunate translations and renderings of the original text. I am not a Hebrew scholar, but I've done a lot of reading in Hebrew. I am no kind of doctorate philosopher on the subject of languages, much less Hebrew, but I have dug far enough to realize that this isn't the best translation of the Hebrew language. The word itself, there's one word for be still. And the one word in the Hebrew really means to, to use our language, it means to relax, to let go of, to surrender. The word was used often in everyday vernacular of like holding a rock in your hand and you would let go and drop the rock. It would be better rendered let go rather than just be still. And there's a reason for the difference. It's not a matter of just being still in the sense of not moving or being still in the sense of not speaking. It's being still in the sense of letting go of any idea that you are in control. Letting go of thinking everything depends upon you and what you do. Letting go of the idea that you are in charge of everything that happens. Let go, and the whole psalm speaks to the opposite of all of that. When all is said and done, who is our very present help in trouble? It's not us. It's not those around us. It's not those that we work for or we even elect. Who really is our very present help in trouble? It's God, who is refuge and strength and the very present help in trouble. And he wants us to know, no matter what happens around us, know whatever might happen to us or against us, that he has more power than anything we come up against. He has more power over anything we can imagine. And he surely has more power than we have. And so relax. Let go, as the text says, be still, and know something. Know that I am God. I think sometimes the reason we don't spend a great deal of time with the thought here is because it goes against the grain of what we naturally think, and that is the sense that we need to be doing more. We need to be working harder. And the Bible certainly presents that view that we need to be working hard and doing all we can. Be steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord. 1 Corinthians 15:58. Be not weary in well-doing. In due season you'll reap if you faint not. Galatians chapter 6. We should be diligent in adding these Christian graces to our lives. As 2 Peter chapter 1 tells us, scores of passages remind us, encourage us, charge us to do all we can. And this is not negating that idea at all. It's just saying that while we're doing all we can possibly do, we let go of the concept that we are in ultimate control of everything, that everything depends upon us. That's what we're to let go of. We should let go of our anxieties, let go of our worries, let go of our fears. Let go of our sense of self-reliance. Let go of all of these matters of self and self-absorption. And relax and let these things go. And let ourselves dwell in the presence of God's promises and His power. All the while continuing to do all we can do. A classic story in the Bible shows us what we're talking about. Remember back in 1 Samuel we read the a wonderful story of a man small in stature who's young in age, who's overpowered by his own brothers in terms of their stature, their strength, and their age. And he stands up against a 9-foot-tall behemoth of a monster of a man named Goliath. And I don't have to ask you who wins the battle because you know who wins the battle there. Goliath, when all is said and done, he's on the ground, his head is cut off, and he has lost that battle. And David, little David, has won the day with one sling, 5 stones of which he uses just one of them, and with that one stone he fells the giant. And before that happens, before the actual context takes place, before the battle even transpires, David is seen in his language as being at peace with the power of God. And bewildered that nobody else besides him has come to realize that the battle belongs to the Lord. That it's God's battle to win, not the individual fighting Goliath. And so he's bewildered that no soldier has taken the Philistines up on the offer of fighting against Goliath. His own brothers haven't taken up. Saul himself, the king, who stands head and shoulders above the rest of his people. He hadn't stood up to fight against Goliath. But David can't understand why nobody's been willing to. David will do it. And why? Is he bigger? No, he's smaller. Is he stronger? No, he's weaker. Does he have more experience? No, he has almost no experience in a case like this. Does he have better armor? No, he has no armor. And so why does he win? Well, God is our refuge and strength, the very present help in trouble. And David wins that battle not by staying back in the tent and saying, well, God can win it, but by willing to go out and himself put himself on the line and do all he can, trusting God for the outcome. And that last is so important. He does everything he can, trusting God for the outcome. In a sense, relaxing. Letting go, surrendering, being still, and knowing that God is God. And so really, who won that battle against Goliath? Was it David? Well, he was the one standing there at the end, but who really won? It was God. As in every story like that through old either Testament, who really wins those battles against the lions in the case of Daniel, against the fiery furnace like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Who wins those battles? Is it the individuals who stand at the end, or is it the God who gives them power to stand? And in every case, the individuals are doing what they can with what they have as best they can, but trusting God for the outcome, knowing The true power is not in themselves, but in the God who is their refuge and strength and a very present help in trouble. Now, sometimes tensing up can be a good thing. God made us that way physically for a reason. But also He wants us to realize in the larger sense, when we have a choice to make, it's always best to relax, to let go, to be calm. What did your teachers tell you before a big test? Tense up? No, relax. But I can't. I'm so worried. I'm going to fail the test. Relax. You know perhaps more than you think you do. Just relax and you'll do fine. Have you studied? Well, yes, I have, but I'm afraid I'm going to fail. Just relax. And you know from experience the difference in taking a test when you're worried about failing it and a test where you just relax and let it happen. After you've done all you can to study, you're relaxed. Well, that's true just of our human physiology. Think how much more true it is when we add to that physiology the help of Almighty God, who's promised. He's not just hinted, He's promised to be there with us as we're there with Him in our corner doing what He can to help in ways that'll best help others. And that's a promise He's made. All things work together for those who love God, to those who are the called according to His purpose. Romans 8 and verse 28. In the same context there of Romans 8, if God be for us, who can be against us? Oh, the Bible is full in both Testaments, replete with promises just like these two from that 1/8 chapter of Romans. God has promised to help us. The Lord is my shepherd. I walk through a valley of a shadow of death. You're with me. Your rod, your staff, they comfort me. Right here in the presence of my enemies, I can eat with contentment and peace, relaxing as it were, eating my food in the presence of those enemies. The idea is throughout the entire Bible. Be still and know that I am God. I say this in the context this evening of knowing, like you know, that we live in a world of chaos at the moment. There are wars and rumors of wars every day on the news about what's happening thousands of miles away from our shores. What's Putin going to do next? What's North Korea going to do next? What's Iran going to do next? Who's going to fight who, and what are we going to do about it? And are they going to come after us next? A lot of worry is around the world. And then we have concerns closer to home within our own boundaries. What's going to happen to our nation politically, economically, socially, educationally? What's going to happen to our nation? Or have we lost our nation? And many of us have problems even closer to home than that. Problems all around that cause us sometimes to lay awake at night and not just think but worry, not just ponder but have anxiety. And what we should do is what we've always done. That is, pray to the very best we can to do what we can in the circle of influence we have, be it large or small, all the while not being tensed up with the worry and anxiety of what might happen next, what could happen, what's the worst case scenario, but instead relaxing and knowing God is in control. Be still and know that I am God. And those words remind me a great deal of something we almost have taken for granted from years past for us, whether we are children at home or the parents of children in our home. We have been both on the receiving end and many of us on the giving end of this same idea. I've got it covered. Don't worry about it. This isn't your worry. It'll all work out just fine as it should. I remember more than once as a child being concerned about this or that, worried about this problem or that one, and my father putting his arm around me and saying, "Son, don't worry about it. It'll work out. It'll work out." And you know what? I'm still standing here, so it must have. So much so I can't even remember what the problems of the moment were when he said those words. "Don't worry, it'll work out. It'll be fine." And I remember as a parent doing the same thing to my kids when they had an anxiety or a worry. "It'll be all right. Especially in matters that I had any control over. I'll take care of this. Don't worry about it. It'll be fine." Well, I'm talking about human interactions and families and the frailties of those families, which are finite and have their limitations. But what about the God of heaven who sees us in such a fit of anxiety and he puts his arms around us, as it were, in his word and tells us, "Don't worry about it. Be still. Relax. And know that I am God." And I promise you, God has more power over my world than I ever had over my children's world. God has much more control over my world than my father had over mine as a child. God says, "Be still and know that I am God." And so whether there are problems around the globe or across the nation or closer to home or even looking back at you from your own mirror, all of us need to remember and remember very well that there's more to this thing than just us and what we decide, what we choose. We must do our best, but trust God for what really is best because He's in control, He's in charge, and He'll take care of His own. He always has. He always will. If you're here tonight and outside of Christ, don't leave in that condition. And if, as a Christian, you've walked away, come back. But if you need to come, come now as together we stand and sing.